Here's the beauty of December. Right now, people at the BWI message board are asking Sean Fitz and Ryan Snyder, hey, anything going on with blank person yet? Hey, what's going on with this? I'm doing the same thing too. So we're going to ask Ryan Snyder together, hey, what's going on with like Daniel Harris and all that stuff? That's coming up on the BWI Daily Edition. Nothing like a good flail on the graphics to start the show. Ryan Snyder with us. Happy Friday, Ryan. How you doing today?
Doing well, man. Counting down the days to December 21. It has only been a week, but it has sucked, if I'm being honest with you. No, I mean, it's a good week for the site, you know, fun, but just I'm tired. It's only been a week, so.
Yeah, there's been a lot of there's been a lot of stuff, even though there hasn't been a lot of stuff, it feels like. So this is the perfect time of year. We're going to start out with this today on the Daily Edition, which is subscribe to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Like, I have poured my heart and soul into the Daily Edition, but if you want to get inside information as it's happening, the only place you can get it is BlueWhiteIllustrated.com on the Lion's Den message forum. Even before it gets into the premium content, Ryan and Fitz are all over everything. They're giving you the information on the message board. So if you want to know about the future of Penn State football with NIL and with the transfer portal and with recruiting and everything else, that is the hub of information. If you want to be one of the smart people in your friend group about Penn State football, now's the time to sign up. $10 for the next 10 months. Great deal. Also, subscribe to the channel, because if that's a step too far, then check out the channel. Subscribe, watch the videos. You'll get hooked. You'll be in the Lion's Den before you know it. So, Ryan, let's go over some of the things that we've talked about lately and some updates or not updates from Tuesday's recruiting show, because I know off the bat, we are now on Daniel Harris watch. So what's going on there?
Daniel Harris was supposed to commit yesterday. I mean, he didn't. So here we are, 24 hours later, and not really, I'd say more like 12, 13, 15 hours later from what we were expecting. No decision yet. We will get into where the coaches are and stuff this weekend. I will say right off the bat, they are down there visiting with the family today. So let's see if things change. It's not often where I have what I would consider probably my best source say, it's done, it's back to 50-50, it's done, and it's back to 50-50. I don't know if I've ever had that where I have, four roller coasters within a week. Usually when it's done, it's done. So I'd be lying if I said I have an amazing feel at the moment, and I don't think anyone really does. I will say that Georgia supposedly said that they were going to be done with this one. Coming from our Georgia colleagues and coming from Penn State sources, there was multiple indications that Georgia was done. And now here we are, and I don't think Georgia's done. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I wonder if there's a third school. I wonder if Miami is getting involved with this as well. Miami is unabashedly throwing around money right now that I would call stupid money. So I wonder there. I don't know, and I want to clarify that, but I do wonder if that's part of it. And, Penn State is doing everything it can to lock him down. I feel confident in saying that, the player was planning to commit to Penn State earlier this week, and it seemed like Mom is on board as well. But, something is holding this up. So pretty much noon on Friday we're taping this. Yep. I would think that there's a real chance that we could get some answers over the weekend. But I expected an answer yesterday, and here we are, and we don't have one.
So, again, subscribe to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com so you get the latest up-to-date information, because it sounds like this one's just going to happen when it happens. It's a very important isn't the right word, because it is an important one, but, with the way the class and the DBs have stacked so far, Penn State is already good, but those over-the-top players, this is what we talked about, whether it's Samson Okunlola, if they had an outside shot with him, these are the players that they're going to find room for. So this is the first one of those that we're talking about, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, look, it's should be noted that Miami is pursuing Conrad Hussey, and whether he visits or whatever happens there, we'll see. You know, again, I mentioned Penn State's coaches on the road. They are going to St. Thomas Aquinas tonight. Aquinas has a playoff game. They'll be at the school today. I mean, there's a whole handful of coaches in South Florida, which we'll discuss in a bit. But they are going to have to stay on him pretty hard. Conrad, of course. And I'll be very interested to see if he goes and visits Miami. I would, since he lives down there, I would be kind of surprised if he doesn't. So we'll see how that plays out. But this is certainly a plus one situation with Daniel Harris. He would instantly become the top ranked defensive back in this class. You look at his size, 6'2", 175. You look at that documented, I think it was a 10.700 meter. There's a lot here that stacks up really well. Our guys compare him to Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, a great player, of course, for the Cardinals all those years. Of course, he very similar to Joey Porter Jr. That's been Penn State sell with Daniel Harris. So there's a reason to go all out for this one. But when that answer or when that final commitment or whatever it may be is going to come. Again, I was fully ready for it to come yesterday. And then it was really, I'll be honest, Wednesday night, we got the news that this was probably not going to come yesterday. But it's like I said, just been up and down for a week now. So I wasn't shocked yesterday that he didn't come because I was tipped off Wednesday night that it probably wouldn't happen. But here we are now Friday. Penn State's down there visiting with the family. Maybe that'll help push things in the right direction. But Georgia certainly seems to not be out of it after we were told they were. So
yeah,
here we are.
So that's another. I'm going to do it again. I'm sorry. I can't help it. Subscribe here to the YouTube channel. So when the news breaks, we'll have the information ready to go for you so you understand the in-depth timeline. You're getting bits and pieces of it throughout the daily edition and the recruiting show. But we'll lay it all out for you. We'll give the information on what Penn State is getting. We'll give you a brief analysis of what he is as a football player. And then you'll be up to date here on the YouTube channel as well. So a good time to subscribe for the holiday season because you're going to be busy. And you just need that little bloop on your phone. And you'll see that the breaking news has broken. Let's move on to Duke Watson. Tell me who that is and why Penn State fans should be aware of Duke Watson.
Yeah, really good 2024 running back out of Georgia. Penn State only offered 2 weeks ago, and things have moved really, really fast here. But he's a player that I think has serious interest in potentially committing to Penn State in the near future. What I will say is that I know Mike Yurcich is down there today. I feel like I should just go through all the coach visits because we're just hitting on them constantly. But we will, I promise. Mike Yurcich is down there today. He's down there checking up on a few guys. And Watson is one of the guys he will check up on. So that's interesting. Watson put out a tweet this week that he wants to commit soon. And then, oh, by the way, watch this jump set. Some of these things right here. This is the Sean McCoy guys. He's so similar to the Sean McCoy. It's kind of, I don't know, silly or I don't know what the right word is, but just look at the way he carries the ball. Look at the way his jump cuts are. There's so many similarities to Shady, who, by the way, used to torch me back in the day as a young linebacker at Central Dauphin. It was sad. But I think to get back to the point here, though, I think Penn State is going to have a decision to make because he wants to decide. I think he wants to commit soon, but the issue is he hasn't visited yet. This has all been within a matter of a couple weeks. But you're in the dilemma of, well, if you kind of say no and hold off, you're probably not going to get this opportunity again. But so if you accept it,
what's the reason to hold off?
If you accept it, you know that he is going to get other offers, and this isn't really probably going to be truly finished. So,
okay.
But the reason to hold off is just because you know what's coming. I mean, you look at his offers list now. I mean, there's some good schools on there, but you know these SEC schools are going to come at some point. I mean, everybody's trying to focus on 2023, and there's all this NIL money getting thrown around that it's extra incentive this year to really make sure you put all your focus these next 3 weeks on 2023. So that's why he doesn't, I think, have some of the offers that he's going to get. I mean, there's Auburn circling, Florida State circling. He's been to Tennessee, I believe it is. Like, these big schools are very interested. He just doesn't have the offers yet, but they're going to come at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's because that's the reason to ask that question is, you look at that tape, and I know that we're looking at highlights, we're not looking at the full thing, but 6'1", 185, and you're comparing him to LeSean McCoy, and he's a big back in some senses, like of his potential. So it's an amazing profile when you look at it, you know, without the testing numbers and all that stuff, but just the on-field speed, the on-field moves and all that stuff, it is good to know, like, the, well, why would they wait? Are they worried about testing numbers or any of those things? But really, it's about the journey and having a guy in 2024. Now, is this, it wouldn't affect Quentin Martin, but would that be if this were to happen and they were able to get Quentin Martin, is that another two running back class like Nick Singleton and Catron Allen? Because that's a lot of talent at one position.
Well, the one thing I would say too, you just mentioned testing numbers. Watson has a verified 11-1 as a sophomore for 100. So obviously he's got 2 years to improve on that. I mean, they think that he could be a 10-8, you know, kind of guy, maybe a 10-7, which is great. I mean, anything sub 11 is good. 10-8, 10-7, you're very happy with those numbers. So that's what they kind of project to where he could be. As far as Quentin Martin goes, I mean, yeah, Quentin Martin is being recruited as a running back, but just long-term, personally, I'm not sure if that's really where his best position would be. I mean, after going out there and watching him, you know, there's a part of me, and talking to his coaches, I mean, there's part of me that really thinks maybe defensively as a safety, sort of some sort of a hybrid player would probably be where his ceiling is best. But he wants to be recruited as a running back, and that's where Penn State's going to recruit him, wherever he wants to be recruited at. He's that important of a player for them. So I don't think that this would impact them with Quentin Martin too much. But, I mean, either way, I feel like this is Quentin Martin's going to be a Penn State, Ohio State in the end. Right. And it's going to be that kind of a recruitment. So we'll see. But they have a decision to make here, probably with Watson. Unless Watson decides, you know what, I am rushing this, I'm going to hold off, which maybe will happen. But as of this week, he wants to commit to Penn State, and he wants to commit soon.
It's fascinating, and I think that you look at the building blocks of a class and all of the things we've talked about heading into the next season. This is some of the stuff from this past fall that we haven't seen, is these early commitments from guys in 2024. But long road ahead, as you've said before, with Duke Watson. So now that we're talking about where all the coaches are, where are all the coaches this week?
Right. Well, I mean, I've already kind of hit on the South Florida gang. Taylor Stubblefield's down there as well to check out on Edwin Joseph. You know, I think if anybody you follow Twitter, you may have seen Jaywon Sider's tweet the other day. It's Sider, Dex, Terry, and Stubbs. They are all down in Florida. Sider, Dex, Terry are all expected to check up on Daniel Harris. And then you have a couple games going on too. St. Thomas Aquinas is still in the playoffs. Shaman Amadonna, home to Edwin Joseph, they're still in the playoffs. And then who else is it? Terry Smith is going to go out and see Elliot Washington, who is also still in the playoffs for Venice. So you're going to have a couple games tonight that they're going to hit on. They've already stopped by the schools by the time most of you guys are listening to this. But Aquinas, you know, for Conrad and King Mac, that's going to be an important stop for them. You have Chaminade, of course, for Edwin Joseph, who at one point I was wondering, you know, is Penn State really going to push for Edwin? Because it just felt like at one point they could have had him, but they didn't really push the gas and go all in. But he's certainly a take, and they are going to push for him now. I've kind of learned more on that. And then, of course, you have Christopher Johnson down there, and you have Daniel Harris down there. So those are pretty much the four main schools, Dillard, Gulliver Prep, Aquinas, and Chaminade in the Miami area that they'll be at. And then again, Terry Smith's going to go out to Venice to see Elliot Washington play a playoff game tonight. Terry was supposed to go see Elliot during the season, and Hurricane Ian came through and wrecked those plans. So not that it matters, because it's the contact period now and he could consistently go each week anyway, but that was a visit they had planned and you know, weren't able to do. So that's the Miami crew, the South Florida crew. As I mentioned, Mike Yurchitz is also in Georgia. Duke Watson is who he's going to check up on. But the main visit down there is Cameron Wallace, the young running back, of course, from Montgomery County in rural Georgia. I don't know exactly where it's at, but you know, I just know that's a real small school. So Cameron Wallace, of course, took an official visit to Penn State a few weeks ago. He is now expected to go to Washington State this evening. I wasn't able to double check on whether he's going to make that, but I believe he's flying out to Washington State today for that official visit. Still trying to get a better feel of Florida State's going to offer. Florida State would be the school that challenges Penn State here, in my opinion, but they haven't officially offered him yet. And then, oh, by the way, there's another really important 2024 player in Georgia in Luke Kroemenhoek, the Florida State, speaking of Florida State, quarterback commit, who, of course, visited for the Minnesota game. So Yurchich will check up on him as well. I will leave, I'm trying to think, any other notables here? I'm going to leave the rest of the coaches out of the pod just because we need to make sure that those who subscribe are getting information that others aren't. But there are, of course, some other notable visits for the rest of the staff as well. But I do feel comfortable in sharing the ones we have.
So what is it? What are these? Describe how these particular visits work. You talk about it being the contact period. They can go talk mm-hmm. to the players themselves. It's not the bump rule. It's not talking to the coaches. They can actually discuss signing day and everything in detail with the players. And what
2023.
What is the value then of these, these final pushes in terms of, if a guy is committed, is it just FaceTime? What is the value of these when it comes to the individual players?
So they are allowed to meet with 2023 players in school and at home, and they'll both those visits will happen on the same day. So to circle back a little bit further, assistant coaches can go visit these players once a week for the next 3 weeks. Then you have the dead period for the bowl games and the holidays, and then you can do it again in January if they're not signed. So they could do 3 in-home visits. They can actually do them when they're signed as well, but it's just not quite as important once they're obviously signed. So for example, like Terry Smith, for example, and those guys down in Florida, like I'd be shocked if Terry Smith does not go see Daniel Harris every week until he is committed. Actually, and they're going to go see him after he's committed too, if he commits, because they got to keep him lined up. And in previous years, I always was kind of like, yeah, these visits seem kind of like semantics. Like, why do they're committed? What's the big deal? That is not the case anymore with this NIL right. stuff, man. I mean, you better be on top of your stuff here in this NIL era, where all it takes is one phone conversation and a couple promises that may or may not be kept, and a player really has something to think about. So they're going to see every single one of their committed guys here over the coming days. I have no doubts about that. And then, of course, those guys that we've been talking about who aren't committed, I would expect them to check out on every week as well. The other thing I would say is James Franklin, between this contact period in December and then the other couple weeks in January, he's allowed to do check in with each of these guys one time between those two periods. So that's important to know. So for example, he's going to do, I didn't share this earlier, but I'll share this. He's going to do Zion Tracy's family and Ty Blanding's family tonight for in-home mm-hmm. visits. That'll be it for James. Now the rest of the staff, John Scott can go up there. Stacey Collins can go up there in the coming weeks. Head coaches can only do one in-home, in-school kind of combination day with these guys during this contact period. But it's very important for the guys who aren't committed, right? Because you're going to have all the other coaches coming in. And yep. You got to keep showing your face, keep pushing your message. For the guys that are committed, there's many of them who are signing with Penn State. There's nothing to worry about, but you still got to keep doing them. And then you got other guys like Conrad Hussey who are being pursued by Miami you better stay on top of it and make sure other schools aren't stealing them away.
And the NIL, the problem talking about this with you guys is that, like, speculation, none of this is public, but Miami specifically, you talk about NIL and what they've been able to do with the season they had and then being able to flip players from other schools repeatedly this year. It is a real thing. It hasn't affected Penn State as of yet, I don't think, in this particular, like, from October on, I don't think. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But it is something when you talk about, like, you've got to be on top of this stuff. This is the reason why, correct?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially now more than ever. And until there's a salary cap or some sort of rules that we're not thinking about right now, this is an incredibly important period, maybe the most important period of the year, just because if you got schools with money and they're desperate, you have no idea what's coming. I mean, I don't know the numbers on Collins Atchapong, who Miami stole from Michigan. I've heard numbers. I don't know mm-hmm. those numbers, obviously. But it's stupid money, guys. If those numbers are correct, so we'll see. We'll see what's going to come here. But Miami, Michigan State, the Texas A&Ms, a bunch of other SEC schools. Which, by the way, this is funny. There were 3 top 25 teams this year who started in the top 25 and weren't bowl eligible. Those 3 schools were the 3 I just listed: Michigan State, yep. Miami, Texas A&M. all who are just throwing crazy, stupid money around right now. I found that funny. I don't know what that means long term, but you know, those three are among the top five, six, seven or so that are playing this game. And I just found that hilarious that they didn't finish bowl eligible. So that's all. Just a fun stat.
And it's been interesting over the last week, you know, since the season has ended. I just casually following on Twitter some of our Twitter accounts, including On3 Recruits and on Instagram as well. So you want to check these out because they put out a graphic of every player that goes in the transfer portal. And like, I can't scroll 10 seconds without finding another Texas A&M player hitting the transfer portal. Like, it's bananas, yeah, the amount of all of this stuff that's been going on. And, you know, without any of the hard facts to talk about it, it's all speculation, but it is fascinating to watch all of that happen in real time and then kind of go back and look at it. Not this weekend, but next weekend, official visits. That's the big weekend for the Nittany Lions that you and Fitz have been talking about. So do you have any updates on that or any other official visits for as Penn State tries to push into the early signing period?
Yeah, the only main visit update this week is Kedrick Riscano, 2023 running back, formerly committed to Michigan State, ironically. That's the second time we've had that in this podcast. Talking about Florida State earlier, now Michigan State. But, yeah, he is set to visit December 9th to the 11th. I mean, right now, from what I've gathered, Cameron Wallace and Christopher Johnson are more realistic. Penn State expects to get Kedrick on campus, and maybe some things will shift around and change there. But the better relationships, the better vibe I get from talking to people are with Christopher Johnson and Cameron Wallace. I mean, Cameron Wallace is absolutely a player they should be able to get. I don't see any reason why Penn State shouldn't be able to get him. The only reason I don't see him in this class is if they get Christopher Johnson. And maybe Kedrick Riscano will things will change there. That visit will go great. He'll become a player I'm talking about a little bit more. But just right now, I think the focus remains on getting Christopher Johnson, who you will get his, they will get his final official visit, and those are always important. And then, of course, he has a really good relationship with Sider too, and that's important as well. And then, depending on what happens there, you have Cameron Wallace, who is another speedster, and you know he's had a late recruitment, a late rise. But you got those documented 100 meter times. You got a lot of things there that you like, and they would certainly be happy to get him.
It's a class where you're going to take two running backs or get a portal. Like, they're locked in to getting one of these guys, is what you're saying.
They have to, yeah. I mean, again, I Kevon Lee, I don't think there's a decision that's been made yet, but he still has a decision to make. Devin Ford's gone. I mean, you have a potential situation right now where you only have Nick and Katron, excuse me, because you have London Montgomery coming off an injury. So you don't know how that's going to play out. So, yeah, they absolutely have to get another running back. I wouldn't even be completely shocked if, you know, they got Cameron Wallace or one of these guys, and then if something fell to them in the portal, they would look at it as well. But we got to remember the 85 scholarship number as well, and that's going to have a big impact on all of this. I mean, they only had, what was it, 13 or 14 scholarship guys on senior day, I believe it was. I mean, pretty much half that list was walk-on guys. So it's not like they have a massive outgoing senior class this year. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, just, and again, if we're going to see a 23 player recruiting class, you know, those numbers have to be made up somewhere. So important to keep in mind. We'll see who else goes into the portal, but certainly there's going to be others. I mean, Vayu is going to be far from the only one. Vayer, excuse me, Vayer. I've been calling him Vayu for 5 years. Leave me alone. Sorry.
It's been very quiet for Penn State. You know, we talk about the rush of players putting their name in before the portal opens on the 5th, I believe is the right date. But nothing from Penn State really so far, and that, as you point out, is going to change. But it has been interesting that it's been pretty quiet for the Nittany Lions. Okay, so let's get to the thing that we haven't talked enough about on this show, and that is the college football playoff expansion. That news was announced, I believe, Wednesday night and or Thursday morning, and it is a massive shift in college football, where now you're going to have a 12-team playoff, and it's not going to be in some distant future number that's like 2026 that feels like it's forever away. This is the after next football season, it's going to start. So ramifications for college football, where do you want to start with that?
I think anyone who doesn't like it is being a hard ass for no reason. I mean, this is a great – I think this is great for college football. And I understand the arguments against it. I understand the, oh, it's going to kill the regular season. I think it's stupid.
It's going to kill the regular
season. Oh, go ahead. Go, T. Frank. Let me hear your argument, and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
So here's the point. I think
you're already wrong. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, great. The college football regular season, absolutely every single game matters. You cannot lose a game, which means your season is over in October. And then you got to have a zombie season where teams and fans are checked out and no one is really having fun outside of maybe, you know, a couple million people that follow four schools, you know, whatever millions that is. And then the rest of college football just has to accept that they are in some second class. Let me tell you, every single NFL game. And no, they all don't matter the same in terms of non-conference versus conference games. But I watch every single one of them with the same rapt attention. Just because I don't feel like there's a guillotine over my head doesn't mean it doesn't matter. And it allows you to play meaningful games late in the year and still have a level of joy about football. You know, I'm with Nate. This system has created a toxic place where fans feel like if you're not first,
you're
last.
You're saying the same thing I'm saying. We're not on the opposite sides on this. Okay,
I know.
You came off as we were on the opposite sides. You're saying the exact same thing I'm arguing. So go ahead. I totally agree with everything you're saying there. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just ranting because I think that is the most inane conversation that is entirely based around your love of bowl games, which don't care about you. The idea of the tradition and all these things held up and propped up by the bowl games doesn't make any sense. Like, it's not a worthwhile endeavor for people to root for outside of maybe the Rose Bowl. Like, I feel like this whole thing, no one really cares about the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, or at least maybe this is Big Ten bias.
I was just going to say, this is total Big Ten bias, but go on.
Right.
Go on.
There's a couple of bowl games that have this level of importance. And I would say, and that's, I guess, my point is, even in the New Year's Six, there's a hierarchy of games that probably matter more or less, because traditionally, over the last couple of years, the SEC and their bowl games, like, they've been going to the college football playoff routinely. And we waited on the Rose Bowl to say, okay, we don't have to have 5 p.m. on the first for our slot. Mm-hmm. So, like, we've just been holding on to these things that don't necessarily matter to the sport. They matter to the bowl games, which have been exhibitions throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So a couple things. One, do you know the best Rose Bowl of all time? Well, I don't know if you know this, but the best Rose Bowl, in my opinion, of all time was the national championship between USC and Texas. Okay.
Yeah.
It was the only time that Rose Bowl wasn't at 5 o'clock, by the way. Or Eastern time. It was a night game. So the whole bullshit, excuse me, sorry my language, that's the second time I swear today. The whole BS of, you know, we got to have the sunset and all that stuff. It doesn't, I mean, yeah, it's nice for TV and it looks good, but it's not going to impact the ratings or anything like that.
I mean,
people are still going to tune in for the Rose Bowl, which is why the Rose Bowl gave up on this. I mean, they have the power. They had the power. They didn't want to release the power. They knew that if they don't release the power, they're going to get cut out of this, and all of a sudden the Citrus Bowl is going to be sitting there like, you know, eureka, how did this happen? So, but look, I think the argument of like, oh, you know, look at this weekend, you know, the 5, 6, 7 arguments on who could get in, like, that's going to go away. I see that all the time, and I think it's so stupid. If, you know, 3 weeks ago, I think it was maybe going into November, there were like 30-some teams, maybe 30, I think it was like 33 or 34 teams that would have still been alive to make a 12-team playoff going into November. I mean, how is that not exciting? You know, because obviously if you just win your conference championship, you're in, right? So pretty much in every P5 conference, you know, your top three teams have everything to play for, you know, going into the final few weeks of the season. So I think there's a lot to like here. I still think that at the end of the day, you're going to have the top schools. And yes, the playoff should help with recruiting a little bit, but I still see Georgia. I said it on the podcast a couple weeks ago. This is going to be Georgia's decade, guys. And Georgia's going to win multiple national championships. They're going to win one this year, and they're going to win two or three more, you know, in the coming years. So I don't see that changing. I still see, you know, some of those powers being powers, but it should also help Penn State in their arguments with top level talent of, hey, you know, you don't have to go to Clemson. You don't have to go, you know, to Ohio State or Michigan now to make the playoffs. So that's important to know. But hey, look, more money's involved with this one. The only thing I don't really like is that I do feel like, and I understand why the Bulls are involved in this quarterfinals, but it is silly to me that if you finish in the top four and you get a bye week, you don't get a home game, because think of just the financial impact of that. I mean, it's funny. Like, if you're an athletic director, you almost kind of want your team to finish fifth instead of fourth because of the financial impact you'll get from that home game. So there's some silly things like that. Go ahead.
How much? No, but that's one of the things I wanted to get to, which is an added home game. And at least, I'll say this, at least the advantage is going to be spread out over more teams now than four when it comes to being in the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. But you are going to still have that condensation of talent in the top 12.
You're going to have it in the top five. Let's clarify that. It's still not going to change recruiting as much as I think the argument can be made that it will. It will help. But you're still going to have a 5, 6, 7 teams like you do right now that are going to get the majority of the talent. Sorry to cut you off.
But does it open up the door for teams to have mobility to that maybe 5 spot, even if the top 4 are in, or to get into 12, you know, if you routinely make the playoff? And the financial part of that, of having a home game, how much is that? Is that just a drop in the bucket considering the TV money? Or is that a value that it's going to be another economically competitive advantage for the top 12 teams that you're getting home games and you're playing on TV more and all that stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the financials of, you know, what the home team would get, you know, from the TV contract, things like that. I haven't read on that. I'm just thinking of the town of State College.
No, that's,
you
know, what
I'm... You have a playoff game. I mean, I don't know how all those businesses and all those other, you know, hotels and whatnot will benefit. I'm sure Penn State as a school is going to benefit. I'm sure they'll get probably tens of millions and to some degree from benefiting from having a home game there. But I don't know the specific numbers or anything like that.
The only other thing I was wondering is what happens when the Pac-12 implodes? Because it's the top six conferences.
They're just trying to join the Big Ten.
Right, but like, so the seeding goes by conference, six
they
conference
can
championships.
That. Right. Okay, then fine. Then I'm sorry to cut you off. I've done that twice now. AAC, you know, it's a good question. And maybe they can change the way that's written. But, I mean, the best, Washington, Oregon, maybe Stanford, Cal. I still think Stanford, Cal have more power than people think. They make a lot of sense. And then the other schools go to the Big 12. And sure, I know what you're saying. You know, you have those six highest seeds. Maybe they can drop it to five and add an at-large, something like that. But it is only a matter of time until it implodes. I do agree with that.
Yeah, and the formatting doesn't matter. I guess it's interesting that we're making these rules for six conferences when, you know, in the next 2 years it might only be five that actually matter. So it's fascinating how quickly these things are changing, even in the preemptive change. An estimated $450 million in added revenue. And I love the way this was phrased in an article that I read. It was $450 million in added revenue for ESPN, the College Football Playoff Committee, and then the schools. So the teams that are doing these things are third on the list of who benefits from this, which is always super interesting.
Just to clarify too, that's just for these 2 years, because the contract is totally redone in 2026. And when the contract's redone in 2026, Fox is absolutely joining this mix here. So more money is going to come into it in 2026. I mean, it was made very clear that, like, hey, ESPN, you'll get 2025 and 2024, 2025 to all to yourself, because that's the way the contract was written and everybody had to agree and all that. But come 2026, this is going to be, again, Fox is going to have 4 games. You know, ESPN might have 6, something like that. But they're going to share this, no doubt.
When it comes to the Penn State specific issues with this, does this put more pressure on Penn State and other schools, not just Penn State, other schools, to update and renovate their home stadiums, given you're now playing more games, playing longer? I know the winterizing thing is always a conversation, but like, does this do anything to that? And now that the national spotlight is on you, I don't even know if that's a fair way to put it, but just
they need to update Beaver Stadium. I mean, Beaver Stadium. I was sitting next to a guy last week from the Peach Bowl, and he was like, "Wait, when's the last time Penn State updated their press box? Like, he's never been up here before. He was like absolutely shocked going into that press box. We were talking, you know, second and third quarter, you know, we became close. But I mean, they have to do those things, no doubt. But look, the absolute focus right now is NIL. They have to get all the NIL stuff figured out before anything else could get figured out. I mean, that's why I don't think Beaver Stadium is ever going to be updated. But I mean, it's there's things that they need to do, but the facilities have caught up, and that's good. And there's still work to do. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I guess
one more game, right? It's not like it's anything that is going to be transformative in terms of the nation isn't. It's not the Super Bowl. The nation isn't descending on Happy Valley. That's going to put even more pressure. No. It's just another game. Is kind of what
and
I'm
that's
asking here.
Only if you finish between 5 and 8. If you finish on the bottom four of those, or you finish in the top four of those, you don't get that home game. So, no, nothing like that. But it's a good thing for college football, though. I find the argument that it'll kill the regular season. I just find that silly. It's not going to kill the regular season.
Yeah, I've hated that conversation, that argument, that for a while now. But like the last couple years, it feels like this has worn on people to the point that they don't like football anymore. There's the most passionate fan base, part of the fan base, feels like the loss factor is greater than the enjoyment when it comes to the super fans. And I don't know if that's always been the case, but that definitely feels like it. The last couple of seasons have done that to, maybe it's just the Penn State fans coming out of the COVID pandemic and 7-6 and all that stuff.
Yeah, just traditionalist, though. I mean, you got all the money, you got the portal. There's a lot of things that don't. People don't like, you know, but this is 2022 college football, and nothing's going to change.
So we got to do some housekeeping before we get going, and we got to get going soon. But I want to make sure that we get Ryan his laurels for the end of the season, because he did a great job on.
I think this is going to be one of the best seasons Toledo's ever had. We'll do the official play. We'll be -7.5 first half. Degenerate in me sometimes watches a little Hawaii, you know. Stanford. I'll lay 12 with Stanford. Vanderbilt stinks. I had them last week against Notre Dame. That was a winner.
Ryan Snyder, a second half team. After starting under 500, he comes storming back. And did I get this on the ticker right? Did it update? That doesn't look like the right record.
No. 29, 25, and 1. Look, so here's what I'll say. First off, T. Frank's intro was better than my record this year. My record last year was better. 29, 25. Okay. We're plus 500. I expect it to be better than that. All time, I still like my all time stats, 70 and 54. So I'm happy with those. I am mad at myself. I should have. So last week, if you listened, I said, I knew Friday games were going on and you weren't going to be able to listen to this, but I said play Tulane, play Missouri. I wanted to throw those in there anyway, just because I really felt good about those two games. And, of course, those two won. So I feel like I really went 5-3 last week, but we can't count them. So we'll just say it was 3.
You're too honest.
We finished with 500 records the last couple weeks of the season, which I was hoping I'd finish stronger, because usually I've always done pretty well in November. But 29, 25. Yeah, we finished higher than I guess we won a little bit. What did we win? Like $20 maybe? I don't know. I'll take it. And 70 and 54 all time. I still feel good about that 70 and 54 number. I like that.
All I'm saying is it was looking pretty bleak in October, and you turned it around.
We
so
did.
I just wanted to give you some credit for finishing the season strong. We're not doing best bets this weekend. Are we coming back for the bowl games? Do you want to do best bets for the bowl games?
We can do something. I mean, I don't know if I want to put it as my record, though, because I don't know who's not going to play in the bowl games. You know what I mean? Like, that's the hardest thing. But we can certainly do a podcast maybe a couple days out from maybe like a day or two after Christmas, right? Like when you have those constant 3-4 games a day, something like that. We'll do something. But
we should get Greg and we'll do the full podcast and just talk about what you guys like, because you guys know.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're watching here on YouTube, this is just the conference championship weekend. I put the schedule up if you are interested in any of this stuff. Just so you know what's coming up. But no best bets this week on these games. Just giving you the rundown to know what's coming up and who's playing who. Because I get confused this time of year with when the games are and who's playing.
Yeah, I mean, there's just not a lot I like this week, if I'm being honest. Like, I tried to look at some things. I would say that I definitely like Utah over USC. But I've been betting against USC all year, and here they are with one loss. And, you know, I don't know. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of those were point spreads, and we did cover some of them. But,
yeah.
You know, I've been in this boat all year of USC's defense is going to kill themselves, and they haven't really done that too much this year. So, no big deal. But I do, if there's a game I like this week, it is certainly Utah getting points against USC. I would love to get three. It's at 2.5 right now. But, you know, the when I just look at some of the other games, just real quick, I'll rattle them off. I mean, LSU, I would like getting the points in a lot of these games, right? But LSU is actually one I wouldn't touch. But Purdue, like, I would kind of like getting 17 just because Purdue's a throwing team, right? Like, they can backdoor that. You know, I can see Michigan absolutely going up 20, letting their foot off the gas, and, you know, midway through the fourth quarter, and Purdue getting a backdoor. So I would maybe take plus 17. I also do kind of lean towards UCF, excuse me, getting four against Tulane. I've been saying for the longest time, if Penn State wants the Cotton Bowl, I don't think it'd actually be Tulane. I thought it would be UCF. So maybe take the plus four there, but. Other than that, just enjoy watching college football this week. I mean, there's part of me that likes Kansas State as well. I would say if you got Kansas State plus three, I'm interested in that. But I think that line's going to stay at 2.5.
I'm going to stop you before you make any accidental official plays, because I can tell you're getting worked up looking at them. So.
All right, sign into the DraftKings account. Here we go. No, I'm kidding. Now, there's just not a lot to like. Go ahead.
That'll do it for the BWI Daily Edition this week. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. No postgame show. I don't know what to do with my weekend now. Yes, I do. I'll look my wife in the face for the first time in 3 months and tell her I love her, and she won't be mad that I'm working 17 hours on Saturday. But anyway, we'll be back on Monday with a recap of everything and how it shakes out for Penn State. Make sure you subscribe to all the places and all the things. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. We'll talk to you on Monday.